Hey everyone, welcome to the Podfather.
Hey everyone.
It's a special COVID-19 edition.
We're trapped inside.
We've just found out that our lovely state of Victoria is going to go into lockdown within a couple of days.
So yeah, when you're listening to this, you're probably listening from the safety, hopefully from the safety of your own home.
Do the right thing. Be socially responsible. Flatten the curve. Listen to podcasts all day long.
Drink
all
tequila.
All of our podcasts. Drink tequila. We've got a couple of tequila sunrises here. We're going to clink. Here we go.
Some sunrises. Click, clack, clock. That's the sound of joy.
Cabin fever.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen anything interesting online from all the everyone isolating? Any fun tidbits?
I was really thrilled that my favourite celebrities got together and sang a little song. My favourite song as well.
Do you want to do a quick little rendition of that for us?
I'm going to do it as done by Gal Gadot and the crew, okay? Imagine all the people.
Da-na-na.
It isn't hard to do.
Oh, fucking hell. Da-da-da.
No need for greed or hunger.
Na,
that's how they did it.
Na-na-na-na-na.
No religion too.
There
you go. That's the celebrity version. With all the key changes.
I like Seth Rogen's post.
What's he posting about? Pottery?
He posted a photo of him with a big beard and he's like, why does it look like I've been quarantining for 3 months?
That's fair enough. You know, he makes pottery these days.
I did see that too because I wasn't following him on Instagram.
Oh, he's incredible.
And I saw him posting pottery and I was like, wow.
And his mum on Twitter is also really good, Sandy Rogen.
Highly recommend following her Twitter account. What film are we talking about today on
Mulholland Drive, a film that you saw at the Astor
a couple weeks
back
ago
when you were allowed to go to the cinema?
Back when the Astor was open. Mm. Actually, that's a quick reminder. We should slightly serious for a moment.
This is serious.
Since we are a film podcast, if you had any bookings to any cinemas, just keep the tickets. Don't ask for refunds. Be nice. Give them the money. If there are any cinemas out there that have membership programs that you like and you're not a member, become a member.
If you can, of course.
If you can.
Don't break your own bank.
If you got money. If you got some money, spend
it. All of our listeners do.
Yeah, because they give it to us. Yeah, do that. And especially when all those things are back on, go out and buy a movie ticket. Make sure that, you know, we don't lose. I actually am concerned about losing something like the Astor. I mean, hopefully since it's run by a bigger organization these days, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, think about that a little bit. And any music as well, any gigs that you've got, they're all going to be rescheduled eventually. So you don't need to get refunds. You already paid for it. Hang tight. It'll all happen and we'll all be happy and merry soon.
Yes, it will all be fine. Particularly smaller artists are the ones, and smaller businesses in the arts are the ones that are going to be hit the most. Like Comedy Festival in Melbourne's coming up.
That's huge.
So that's literally someone's yearly revenue that they're banking on. So if you can donate your ticket to them, or even part of it.
Or if they have anything on Bandcamp or other services, like Bandcamp did a really good thing over the last couple of days where more of the proceeds actually went to the bands or whatever. You know, maybe there are comedians with podcasts and they have Patreons or whatever. Just, you know, if you got a bit of money to spend and you're not going to be impacted too much yourself, give it to them. They need it because the arts is maybe not an essential service.
No, it's an essential service though.
It's an essential service. Exactly. It's essential to us, like to people. Like
and
we all want
culture.
It. We want it to live. We want the culture, but and it's like, not going to be prioritized.
2 months ago, our country was on fire and everyone in the arts banded together literally to raise money for everybody. And now they're sort of being kicked to the curb, financially speaking, which isn't good. So just think about that. If you're listening to our podcast, you probably thought about that already.
Probably. But one of the four people.
But, you know, tell all your friends. Don't be a dick.
It was really great when we did a live stream 2 weeks ago and we had about 7 people watching. Imagine if we had done it 2 weeks from now when everyone was at home with nothing to do.
Oh, we really missed the opportunity.
We jumped the shark.
Oh, well. But we are talking about Mulholland Drive.
Mulholland Drive.
A David Lynch film. From what year did it come out?
2001 or something.
Yes, spot on.
Maybe I didn't know something about this film.
It feels like a 2001 film.
Before we talk about it, are we going to eat a biscuit?
But what I wanted to say was it's a bit of a weird one in that it was, I'm just going to start by saying, it was supposed to be a TV pilot.
Mm.
It was shot as a TV pilot and then they turned it into a film. So it's a little bit of an unorthodox film.
Yes, that's very true.
Breaks the rules.
Yes.
And so we're about to break the rules.
Oh, I see what you're doing. That's
we're
a
about
segue.
To break the rules because normally we do Arnott's time. But today we're going to review a biscuit that's not an Arnott's biscuit.
Wow.
It's time to talk about biscuits. It's Oreo time, baby. It's Oreo time. So we're about to be a little unorthodox. I already know what's about to happen and I can't wait. And now, are we going to twist, lick and dunk?
No, I don't. Do you really do that? Does anyone do that?
I'm going to dunk it into my tequila sunrise.
I'll dunk it if you dunk it.
I bought these Oreos.
Absolutely not. Come on, let's dunk.
But it won't give us the correct score of an Oreo. Do you know what I mean? They're soggy orange juice Oreo.
You never know.
Oreo orange juice.
I got these at Coles. They're now selling what I like to call the pandemic packet of Oreos, which is 39 Oreos in one packet.
Oh, my God. No wonder you didn't bring the packet into the room.
If you haven't gone down to your local supermarket and bought the disaster Oreos, the pandemic Oreos, big plug to the Oreo company. It's just a beautiful thing to look at, isn't it?
All right. I'm going to pop it in my mouth. That's a 10.
11.
We've got it. We've got
one good.
We've got an equal winner. We've literally tipped the scales. So equal first on 10.5 alongside stalwart mint slice is the Oreo.
Wow. And it had to be a non-Arnott's biscuit because there's no Arnott's biscuit that's going to match the mint slice. They're just so good, the Oreos. Like, they're very Moorish. I mean, you can't have just one, which we are doing now. We're having a responsible serving of Oreos and an irresponsible serving of tequila, which I think is a good mix.
We should have described what the biscuit looked like for those that haven't seen one before.
It's like a little black circle, two little black wheels.
Looks like a Connect Four piece.
It looks a bit like a Connect Four piece. There's a nice white creme in the middle.
Yeah, and it's really nicely patterned, like so many biscuits of the past.
Like the old days.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like any of the other Oreo flavors, such as chocolate or strawberry?
The chocolate one is fine, but it's not better.
It's not better?
Sometimes, because it's already a chocolatey biscuit.
It's already chocolatey.
But what makes it so divine is the little bit of white cream in the middle. When it's a chocolate cream. The same thing happened when they did a chocolate Golden Gay Time ice cream.
Oh.
It was really nice.
So it was chocolate in the middle?
Yeah,
and chocolate on the outside and the nuts.
Yeah, but it was just, it wasn't a Golden Gay Time. And a chocolate Oreo isn't an Oreo, you know what I mean? It's a nice biscuit, but I don't like it better.
What about like, so same rule for like a chocolate choc top? Kind of pointless, right?
Oh, no, chocolate choc top is the way to go. Because vanilla's like vanilla.
You can get choc mint or you can get banana can get caramel.
That's true.
Or the forbidden boysenberry.
But I quite like chocolate ice cream.
What's the one you like at Nova? Is it chili chocolate?
Chili chocolate. Go to Cinema Nova when it's actually still open.
Are they still open?
But probably not after today.
Probably not after today. Yikes.
Anyway, go to Cinema Nova and try their chili chocolate choc top.
Chili chocolate choc top.
Mm-hmm.
Tongue twister. All right, so yeah, I saw this a couple of weeks ago at the Astor Theatre. It was 35mm presentation. I was very happy about that. Didn't know it was going to be. Took a couple of friends of ours along with me.
Daniel Manning.
Daniel Manning and his lovely girlfriend.
Oh, did Rachel come?
Rachel came.
I didn't realise that.
About halfway through the movie, I felt bad a little bit because I was thoroughly enjoying myself because this is definitely the kind of movie I like to watch. Whether or not that means I like the movie, we'll find out. But it's the kind of experience I like to put myself through. And I was like, oh, I'm not sure if other people would enjoy this.
Well, after you saw it, Daniel was speaking to me about it at length.
It's a thought provoker.
Yeah. Like, and he was like, have you seen it? He couldn't get it out of his head. So I think he was really glad that he saw it.
And I'm really glad that he thought that because at this point it's 20 years old almost now. Mm. So it's obviously still doing to people what it did. I think it always will. But sometimes, and maybe we'll talk a bit more about this. Sometimes these kind of things that were maybe really pointy at the time over the years become less surreal or less weird or less, because maybe the rest of the film and culture has become a bit weirder as well.
Yeah.
But this one still pokes out, I think, is my point. And we'll get into that.
Pop culture in general and, like, let's say millennial and Gen Z humor very much skews in this Lynchian direction now.
Yeah.
There's just non sequiturs galore and things that just don't make sense. And people say things that rely on context from 5 years ago that maybe doesn't exist anymore. So if you're hearing it for the first time, you just... Anyway, it's a weird movie and I want to know why you decided it should be a Podfather movie.
That's a good question. I was going to say, can you walk me through the movie a little bit to refresh my memory? Because I haven't done a lot of reading about it. I watched a couple of weeks ago and I've already kind of forgotten a lot of the plot. But the reason why I wanted to do it is because it's like a noir thriller crime mystery thing.
Kind of, yeah.
That's kind of a way of describing it. Yeah. There's a car accident.
Well, yes. So it opens with, for those who haven't seen Mulholland Drive, we're going to talk about it. So be prepared.
Even if you knew everything that happened, there's
twists. No way you can be prepared for the sensory experience you're about to go through.
You got to watch it. It doesn't matter if you know anything because you won't know anything after watching it anyway.
Yeah. So it starts with this woman in a car. And then they stop the car and she's like, this isn't where we stop. And then they pull a gun on her. But then there's a car accident and they all get hit by the car and she walks off unscathed. And then she's got amnesia and she runs into Naomi Watts. What's going on? Blah, blah, blah.
Naomi Watts, what's going on?
Naomi Watts is really good in this movie too.
Very, very good.
Naomi Watts is an actor in Hollywood. Make it big. And she's, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And then there's some weird stuff that goes on. There's a guy that steals a book. There's another guy that's at a diner and sees a homeless guy. And that's the plot.
So, okay, now, thank you for that. That has walked me through and I've now visualized the rest of the film. The reason why I wanted to do it is because I wanted to point the Podfather into a bit more of a noir mystery direction, which, you know, strictly, is that a crime film?
A crime against film?
Wow. Ooh. Foreshadowing. I think that this is probably less crime filmy, but it has the elements of, I think most of those sort of noir films are detective crime films, right? Mm. So that's my point. I'm like, let's go in that direction a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And this is partly that. It's also a lot of other things and some things that no one will ever understand, no matter how hard you try, which is part of the joy of it, in my opinion. But, you know, there's maybe not so much a crime in the film as much as there will be in other films that we might explore in this direction, but I just kind of couldn't let it go without
talking about it. And I'm really glad I've seen it because it's one that I had meant to see over the years.
Yeah.
I wish I'd seen it at the cinema.
Oh, it was...
Because it's an experience.
Did you watch it on your TV?
Watched it on my laptop.
Oh, his laptop.
First
question.
Yep.
Is what's your history with David Lynch?
Never seen anything he's done. All I've heard is that he makes weird choices.
Good. Because I'm basically the same. I did see A Race Ahead.
Okay.
When I was like 16,
mm-hmm.
with another mutual friend of ours at the Astor Theatre, and I was stoned. So
I remember you telling me about that.
It didn't make much sense, and I don't really remember it. But it did sort of prepare me for this, I think.
Mm.
I didn't expect this to be quite as surreal as well, but by the time I knew that it was going to be like that kind of thing, I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen A Race Ahead. That makes sense.
Okay.
But I really like David Lynch because I watched a couple of interviews with him since and like he's like a really – and he's done a masterclass. Okay. Have you seen that?
I've seen the trailer. Stills, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just like I think I'm really going to like his other things.
Well, you've never seen Twin Peaks?
Never seen Twin Peaks.
Neither have I.
Never seen he did the old Dune and I'm going to watch that before the new Dune comes out. Although apparently I don't think that went very well. I don't think that was quite what he wanted. I've never seen The Elephant Man either, which I've always wanted to see because that's like a classic.
Did he direct The Elephant Man?
I believe so. He's like had a really strange career.
That's crazy.
Very strange career for a very strange filmmaker.
Yeah, and it is a strange movie. And you know what? If I'd seen it when I was like in high school, I think it would have blown my mind. It would have been exactly the sort of off the wall, slightly off kilter, weirdo thing.
Really puts that I would have Ed Wood really to shame, loved. Doesn't it?
but I just kind of, it just felt like an interesting pilot of a TV show. And then they were like, oh, we better fucking just do something with this. Let's get weird for the sake of it. I think it's like I wrote down in my notes, it appeals to my love of strangeness, but is it just weird for the sake of it? Is it good storytelling? No. But also, isn't film more than that? But also, sometimes you just want to watch a movie and anyway, it was a really frustrating movie to watch.
This is the most I think I've seen you really get into a film in a while in terms of like, you've written notes, you've got things to say, you're like questioning your very existence of film. Because
I was really into it for so long. And
okay,
like,
so just to put it, you mentioned it before, but just to put it in a bit of context, it was originally shot as a TV pilot and it didn't fruit that way. So what they did was they kind of shot the bulk of it, then they shot the rest of it. And I think when you watch the film and you know that, you can kind of work out at what point that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it is worth saying that might be my one complaint is that the two main things that we should get out of the way because they're the least interesting in my opinion is the diner scene and then the guy who steals the black book.
Yeah.
Because they are the most – that they poke out the most as like they were part of a TV pilot that would have had – two other potentially great storylines.
Yep.
If it had been a 10-part series or something.
Yep.
But you don't get to find out much else about those. Aside from
but they're really good scenes.
They're really good scenes.
They just don't belong in a movie.
And and maybe other Mulholland Drive theorists out there would disagree, but I believe that you could probably take them out and the movie would still be fucking incredible because the main plot is pretty captivating. I thought.
Yeah.
There's boobs. Works, huh?
Sorry.
That works as like a mystery crime thriller questioning what's happening, who you are, identity. It works like that.
Yeah.
And then you got these two other seemingly going nowhere plot lines, although that at the very end they do revisit the diner thing in some way.
Yeah. And it just felt like they had to.
Yeah, that was kind of like a But maybe we should, you know, get rid of those and talk about the main Naomi Watts and what are their characters' names? Remind me, please.
Betty. And Rita.
Rita.
Because she sees a Rita Hayworth poster. You can call me Betty.
Aww.
I could call you Betty. Anyway, that's what I was thinking about the whole time.
And Betty, when you call me.
And so it does play like, it looks like an episode of Charmed or something from that era.
Yeah, it looks very.
And like where they are and the houses and the architecture, it feels like the room a little bit too, the architecture and like trying to make it in Hollywood. Like, hey, I'm an actor. Like,
yeah, like the apartment they like live in is like a real, like a beachy, weird LA apartment. Like, you know, you're very, very of that era. I know. It is interesting.
And it's Naomi Watts sells this movie. Frankly, if she wasn't like, and I wrote another note that said, spent so much of the film swimming around in the blue of Naomi Watts' eyes.
Aww.
Because, and that the film makes you do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's incredible.
And this was actually like one of her early roles, right?
Well, it was certainly one that sort of got her wider Hollywood attention.
Yeah. Cause it was one of those things where I think it was like, everyone probably was like, that is a fucking weird movie, but whoa, that was a great performance.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
and you look back and you see that it did gain a bit of – it got like an Oscar nom, I think. And I saw one interview where I think it was with David Lynch and he was like, yeah, I don't think it'll get an Oscar nom. Like it had just got like a SAG award or something and he was like, yeah, probably won't get nominated for the Oscars because none of my stuff does or something like that.
Mm.
And then it did. And it was actually quite a – I think it was quite a big film for a weird moment, or like it was, it had a bit of attention around it at the time, even though it is like so clearly, it's nothing like anything else that came out that year, I'm sure.
And that's probably why it made an impact like it did, right?
Yeah. In a way that like, it may be similar to something like Uncut Gems did last year. Maybe it's similar to that in terms of like, you know, it's obviously an arty film, art housey film, surrealist film, which is what David Lynch is. And it popped up in a sea of everything else.
Yeah, he was nominated for Best Director.
I mean, fucking hell, like that seems pretty hectic, right?
Yeah, but
for
also,
this film, which has like literally loose ends from a TV pilot.
Yeah, like it's literally, I don't know if everyone, he was just coasting off the fact that everyone liked him. If anyone else had made this movie, they would have fucking canned it. It's a piece of shit. But it's David Lynch, so everyone's like, ooh, it's so weird and edgy.
What does he mean?
It's like that one dude that shows up to a party and like when you're like 19 and like, you know, he doesn't speak to anybody and he's like smoking in the house. And everyone's like, oh, he's so cool. What does he do? And he doesn't talk to anyone and then he leaves.
Doing a Johnny Depp impression the whole evening, basically.
Well, yeah, fuck you, yeah. No, but actually, it seems like some angsty, like, just be weird for the sake of it bullshit. Maybe that's why I didn't like it, because it just reminded me of something that I would have really liked at a time where I...
Okay, well, I'm going to challenge you a little bit, because, like, okay, a lot of the film is... What ends up happening, the actual film, the plot is that, yes, Rita ends up arriving at... She sneaks into Naomi Watts' apartment when she arrives, and she clearly has amnesia. And I guess the mystery thriller of it all is that Betty's trying to help Rita to understand who she was, what was happening in the car, why there was a crash, what, you know, all that stuff, trying to find her identity. And spoiler alert, what eventually happens, and you do realize this at some point, hopefully, is that you realize that it's not really that happening. It's more a question of Betty's identity and what her actual story was and if it's a dream or blah, 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 blah.
Well, I don't even know if... I think it's unrelated.
No, I mean, they're definitely the same person, I'm pretty sure.
No, I don't think they are.
You don't think they are?
I don't think they're the same people. I think they just look the same.
No, you didn't. Oh, it's like a whole like mind game thing. Is this happening or not? It's a dream.
Yeah,
la,
yeah,
la, la.
Yeah. And I don't think there's the film. The film certainly doesn't answer it. And my interpretation is that it's just something else, and they've just cast the actors to make you think that.
No, my interpretation was that it was like, you know, an identity crisis kind of thing. She's dreaming it. She's la la la. You know what I mean? That kind of thing, which I'm not explaining very well.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. If you've seen Mulholland Drive, send us a message. What do you think it means? I think it was just, oh, let's make it all weird and cast the actors in different roles, like opposite roles. Yeah, sure.
Because then what ends up happening towards the end, you find out that so Betty, and then, but she has another name or something.
No, but I don't think it is. I don't think she does have another name. I think the second part of the movie is just completely separate.
You think it's completely separate?
I think it's completely separate.
I don't. I think it's all related.
Okay.
In like some, you know, it's weird. So we've taken two very distinct stances.
Yeah.
So you think the second character that Naomi Watts is playing is someone else?
Yeah, it is someone else. It's got a different name. She's got a different name. Yeah.
And you don't think there's any dreams happening or any like, you know, depressed self imaginations or like, you know, of what her life could have been or, you know, it's a little bit like a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but it's David Lynch's interpretation of Hollywood rather than Quentin Tarantino's interpretation of Hollywood.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. I guess I just want to find out what happens for the rest of the TV series. You know?
You don't want to sit there and be like, oh, who is she? What? This and that, and then the little box and the key, and like, what does that mean?
You
and
know
the-
what? I wish I was like that, but I don't. I don't care. Like, I don't care. Yeah, which sucks. I want to know what happens to Billy Ray Cyrus.
Oh yeah,
that's what I want to know. Yeah. Okay, I want to know what happens to Justin Theroux's pink like jewelry wife. Like, I want to know about that.
When Billy Ray was in it, the whole of the Astor Theatre cracked up. Because I don't think anyone, even people who had seen the movie, were not ready to see that.
For the cultural impact that he still has.
Well, but legit though, yeah. In some capacity. And that's why it's good for, you're right, it's good for this culture because there's that. That's a meme.
Yeah.
The fact that Billy Ray Cyrus is in this movie is a 21st century, a 2020s meme.
Yeah.
Because he had a daughter called Miley Cyrus and he was fucking on Old Town Road last year.
Yeah.
And then 20 years ago, I mean, he would have been even less of a nobody than he is now.
Well, he was just achy, breaky heart dude, right?
He was just achy, breaky heart dude, and he happened to be in the movie.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This is why I wanted to talk about this movie, because I watched it and I was just so angry afterwards.
So it's not, you're not willing to buy into any of the, you know, metaphors of it or like the, you know, I mean, like I said, I wish I had done a bit more thinking and research because I could explain a little bit better what I'm trying to say. Welcome to the Podfather. You don't like that. You wish it was a bit more of a clear cut story, or you want to know what happens in the rest of it. You're not interested in the theories around it. You're not interested in a piece of art that subverts reality and makes you think.
But I think because I know the story of it being made, I think that colors the way I view it. If I didn't know that, maybe I would have been like, ooh, what do they have in mind for this movie? But I'm thinking, oh, they just wanted to use the footage they shot, so they fucking made a weird ending.
Because it begs the question, if there were at least those two other storylines that didn't go anywhere, you're saying it begs the question that the main plot line probably had much further to go as well.
Oh, exactly, exactly.
Exploring why they turned around the car and, you know, could have been a real crime film because she was suddenly going to get hit by the mob or something.
Yeah.
And why the crazy dude runs the studio and wanted her to be in the movie and la, 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 la.
Yeah. It just feels like the dog ate my homework, but maybe just the last page and you're on your way to school and you have to hand in your assignment, but you need a page that says the end. So you just draw a crayon drawing. And
you know, if we had a lot of listeners, they wouldn't be happy with you about this,
well,
I'm sure.
You know what? Fuck them.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. I think you're right. Like, had you not known that this was, like, actually, I suppose you could say, a failed production, and it was maybe all intended originally to be this way, maybe then you'd be more invested in it.
Yes, I think I absolutely would, and I can admit that.
I think that's a pretty fair assumption, a pretty fair, yeah, summation.
If I just went and knowing I was going to see a movie, I'd be like, oh, wow, that was interesting. But I don't know. Just my background knowledge colored the way I saw it. One thing I did like, I really, really liked when they went to the theater. That was so moving. I don't know. And that was already weird at that
stage.
When
they like start crying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because Crying is playing.
Yeah.
The Spanish cover of, yeah, Roy Orbison's Crying. That's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And then after that, I was like, just should have ended the movie.
Just ended there.
And then there's like weird little like tiny people running around.
Yeah. Oh, and the green screen stuff?
Yeah, it was just
yeah,
weird.
That was a bit like, oh, that looks a bit not good anymore. And probably didn't look very good then.
No, I didn't mind the effects of it all. It was just, I don't know, it felt like it jumped the shark.
Oh, yeah. Well, it looked off.
But like,
but
I'm like
glad
that
I've
also, seen it.
But that also might have been, he kind of, that's kind of him though. I think he would have wanted that it to look off.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah,
that's
maybe
kind of what he does. I don't know.
Silencio. Fuck you. You know?
I mean, I'm going to put it out there that I'm 100% willing to jump onto the, I don't really know enough about this, I love you, David Lynch train. And that was actually like a really cool and thought-provoking film.
It certainly was thought-provoking.
Maybe I'm a normal.
And I would like to watch Twin Peaks. But I expected it to be, I don't know what I expected it to be. I think I expected it to be more.
More cohesive.
No. I expected it to be not very cohesive. And I think that was the issue. But I think I expected it to be good. Like actually good instead of just some sort of, you know, quilt. Of,
quilt?
Yeah, where like a patchwork quilt.
Bed sheet.
Yeah, no. it just felt like, I don't know. I don't know. It felt like one of those kids' storybooks, not storybooks, but where they've got the lift the flaps, and it's like the head of a farmer and the body of a builder and like the leg of a chicken.
But then when the kid presents this to you and you think to yourself, oh man, you know, the mind of a child, so imaginative, so creative. I never would have imagined a farmer head, chicken leg.
Yeah, it's different when it's a child. When it's a grown ass man. It's like just I don't know. I don't know. Cause I like one of my favorite movies of all time is a French film called Holy Motors.
Wow.
And that's not very cohesive at all. And that's a really normie weird film to like too. I really recommend you watch it actually.
Mm-hmm.
And Kylie Minogue's in it.
Oh, really? French film with Kylie Minogue?
Uh-huh. Oui. And it's really good. But I think I don't know. I like my weird films to be weird or not. Or like I like a normal film or I like a weird film. This was a little bit too much in the middle.
What's an example of a weird film that like other than that, maybe something that we've all seen that like Ed Wood or something?
Well, even that's not that weird. Like narratively it's pretty basic structure.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like oh, I'll tell you what, I went and saw Fantasia the other day.
Oh yeah, you saw it at the Astor.
At the Astor. And that is not a cohesive film because by its very nature, it's just literally a bunch of classical music
different scenes.
With animations over
yeah.
it. And I loved it. I thought that was beautiful.
Okay, this could be the weirdest comparison, but they call Lynch a cinema surrealist, like a Dali painting or something, mm-hmm. surrealist cinema, because, you know, obviously it's not cohesive or these bits are here and there and you're meant to kind of piece it together in your own way or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasia's kind of like a surrealist movie too, right? Because it's all these different little bits together and there's crazy shit happening and it's music and la la la. And are they a similar thing?
Well, that's why I brought it up is because I really loved Fantasia.
Mm.
But this, I don't know. And I'm kind of sad. I would have really liked, I think I would have liked it even 5 years ago.
But you've matured.
No. I think, and it makes me sad. It makes me sad that I didn't like this movie.
Yeah, that's interesting. I that's kind of how I felt a little bit after Seven.
Yeah, I really wanted to like it. And maybe that's why I'm so disappointed.
Was it hyped up a little bit to you by me or anyone? Not necessarily by you or anyone,
but it just, everyone was like, oh, you'd love David Lynch or I can't believe you've never seen David Lynch.
There's something to be said about that, and I think it's something that all film lovers have to deal with. Is that they get to a point where music or anything like that, when you start to develop an identity of things that you like, you get people saying you'd love this band, you'd love that movie, rah 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 rah. And I've honestly always just kind of, I mean, like I do it to people too.
Yeah, yeah.
Although when I do it, I think I'm right. But what I try to do is explain why I think someone might like something rather than just saying, oh, that's so you'd really like it. Because it's one thing that you have to understand is like you're never going to know quite why someone likes something because you're not them. You can't feel that emotion. You don't know the emotion that is evoked when I watch Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
Or when I watch The Godfather or when I listen to The Beatles. And my God, I would spend a lifetime trying to explain to someone how I feel when I listen to The Beatles. If I could have a podcast where I just spoke about that for every week, I would. But it would never get across. So you shouldn't do that to people. And the problem is that like with Seven, maybe like with Mulholland Drive, people tell you and tell you and tell you. They say, you fucking love Seven. Seven, what a movie. Mulholland Drive this. Fucking Christopher Nolan, new Tenet movie. This is going to be great. And sometimes you can't help but let that colour it in the wrong way.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Which sucks because sometimes if you had watched it of your own accord, you might have really liked it.
Yeah.
Because I think everyone has a little bit of a greedy, egotistical want to have discovered it themselves.
And you
Even though you can't discover anything new anymore. You know what I mean?
I'm thinking of another comparison, 2001.
Oh, no!
No. Because I love that movie and it's not a traditional
That's
story.
Kind of a surrealist film too.
Yes, yeah. Yes. That's what it's a totally different movie, but I'm thinking in terms of the dialogue that we've created about Mulholland Drive, I feel like maybe they're similar. in the same way. Yeah, I mean, that's like, they're off the wall films, but they're somehow genius.
Yeah.
That's their reputation.
Would you say that Mulholland Drive is genius?
No. No. It just felt slapdash, stick together.
Could you imagine someone saying that about 2001?
No, because it was so meticulously planned. And this doesn't feel planned. It feels like, oh, let's put the same actors in different roles. And like, where's Robert Forster? In one scene at the start.
In the diner scene?
No, no, no. He's one of the cops at the start.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted a Robert Forster movie. I want a Robert Forster TV show.
I think we have to watch Twin Peaks.
I think we have to watch Twin Peaks.
I think that's the takeaway.
Yeah. Is it on Netflix?
I don't know.
Okay.
No, I think it's an HBO thing, isn't it?
Oh, it might have been.
Yeah.
But the remake was on Netflix.
Oh, shit. If the remake was on Netflix. Not the remake,
but the sequel.
Yeah, the sequel. Look it up.
Because I think I need to see more of his work to properly have context for it.
That's part of it a little bit, probably. I mean, look, it totally sold me. But again, part of it's because I do enjoy somewhat torturous things. And I think you could say this is one of those things. In the same way that I love Apocalypse Now, I love this partly because it doesn't make any sense. But it does make you think. And I think there is a bit to take out of it. So you should definitely fucking watch it. I mean, for some people, it'll be...
Twin Peaks is on Stan.
Thanks. And the new one?
Yeah, they're both on Stan.
You'll definitely either laugh or cry or, you know,
something. I'm glad I've seen it. Now I don't have to think about it ever again.
The other reason why I wanted to watch it was because, like I said last week, I don't know if I said it on air. I don't think I said it on air, but I wanted to watch Mulholland Drive, and then I'm dictating the next.
You did say it on air.
Did I?
At least on the live stream, you did.
Oh, okay, cool, good. The next film we're going to watch is back to back anime. If the next one is well received, but the next one's going to be something called Perfect Blue, which is a 90s anime. Which is
Naomi Watts's eyes.
Exactly. Good pickup. And to me, because in my interpretation of Mulholland Drive, these films are somewhat linked, because I don't want to say too much, but it deals with that identity crisis idea.
Okay.
But in a very different way.
Like Jason Bourne.
Yes, 100%. And it is also a bit of a surrealist thing, but again, it's an anime, it's an animation, so it can maybe, you know, play around with those things in a bit more of a satisfactory way. I'm going to go out and say that I think you'll really fucking like it.
Okay.
It's kind of unlike anything I've ever seen, even after seeing a Mulholland Drive. So foreshadowing for next episode.
Cool.
We might still all be in a lockdown state then. So
we certainly might. We might have to go back to Zencaster.
We might go back to Zencaster. Watch Mulholland Drive. Watch Perfect Blue. And then if we like Perfect Blue, there's another film by the same guy called Tokyo Godfathers, which is
maybe
a bit
that.
More of a gangster film. So, and there is crime. Rather than maybe there being crime like Mulholland Drive, there's definitely crime in Perfect Blue.
Okay.
Should we give it a score?
Yeah. Let's say it at the same time.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Well, let me. All right. I'm ready.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
7.5.
All right. So that's 6.25, right?
I guess so.
Okay.
I should have upped it. I wanted to be honest, but I should have upped it.
No. I'm glad you're honest. Honesty is the best policy. 6.25 makes it equal with Mean Streets and Solo, A Star Wars Story. Take that one, David Lynch. You fucking weird asshole, you.
Hey!
No, I'm sure he's a lovely bloke.
He has, can I just say, he has the best hair in Hollywood.
Yes.
And if I can have a head of hair exactly like that at that age, I'll die happy. I want to do the little flick thing. It just looks perfect.
I want to go. I want to have his color hair as
well.
He's
got very good
age.
Color as well.
Just 100%. White.
100%. I'd have that now if it. I wouldn't be that annoyed.
You'd look good with white hair.
I'd go for whatever. Whenever it's ready
Steve
to come.
Steve Martin. It just have white hair all of a sudden
for the rest of your career.
For the rest of your life.
Good thing we're podcasting.
Absolutely. The other thing I'd like to talk about briefly. I know we've already given it a score. But is that I really liked it at the start. I was really into it, and I think maybe that's why I was so disappointed by it.
Yeah, I mean, I would be lying if I didn't say that there is this kind of moment where it probably around halfway through where it starts to take a real turn of like, you know that it's not going to answer anything and you know you've still got quite a bit of the film left. And I think you either at that point maybe get a bit like, ah, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, or you kind of take the road of, well, I guess I'll wait and see and kind of go along with whatever's happening. Because there are a lot of like sort of twists and turns. We didn't really go in much into detail about it, but there is like some revelations, I think, at little bits and pieces there. Or at least there was for me. So maybe I did go on for the ride, but I was questioning whether at the time I was like, oh, you know, should I buy in or not? I think it was like, should you buy in?
Yep. And I guess I just didn't buy.
Yeah. And you know, that's fine. The movie shouldn't really make you choose. Mm. They should kind of
just
put
let
you on
in.
The train, yeah, or let you in.
Yeah.
I wonder, we were saying that a bit with Uncut Gems too, because like Ben Granger, one-time guest, famously didn't like it. And I think partly because he, for some reason, didn't buy in or it didn't let him in.
Yeah. I was like that with the horror movie Hereditary.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone loved it and everyone said it was a masterpiece. It feels like everyone's in the school bus together, enjoying the movie on screen. Like, you know, they put the movie on and you go on an excursion.
Yeah.
But you're underneath with all the bags. Like, you're on the same bus and you can hear it in the distance.
Yeah, you can hear it.
And you can hear everyone laughing and you're like, what?
It's like, I don't understand.
What's going on? But you still get to the same destination. You've still been on the same bus.
Yeah. I think that was a little bit like Us and the Gentlemen.
Yeah.
Because the people we saw it with quite enjoyed it.
They certainly did. But you know what? Well done, David Lynch.
Thanks, Dave.
Tune in next time for some anime.
Yes.
Blue. Deepest Blue?
Perfect.
Perfect Blue.
Blue. It's not very long either. It's like 87 minutes or something.
Wash your hands.
Yeah, everyone wash your hands. Do the old surgical hand washing where you put your hands on top of each other and do the finger thing and then do your normal hand washing and 20 seconds and go. You
don't
go,
forget your thumbs.
Na 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 while you're washing. And then you'll be done. Yeah, well, I'm just trying to be mean.
Yeah, we talk about you behind your back too. tables have turned, mate. Anyway, I watched it on my laptop and I skipped the intro. So I don't know what was going on.